powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
A little bit of a championship round preview with Jeffrey Chedia of NFL Network and NFL.com. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jeffrey, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Happy to have you on and have a little bit of a preview here. But Jeffrey, I have to start, rather than with an AFC or NFC preview, with a question about a debate Bump my co-host and I were just having. Brock Purdy, one of three nominees for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now, here in Seattle, we have a nominee, Ken Walker. Garrett Wilson, another nominee who I love and think deserves that award. Is it fair to have Brock Purdy as a nominee?
Wow, you put me on the spot right away.
I did. I know.
Well, I don't know. Kenneth Walker played how many games? 11?
14.
Right? I think 14. Garrett Wilson played a full season. Yeah, I mean, I could see your argument. I think Brock Purdy's getting in because he's a quarterback. He's playing on a big-time team. I don't know when they actually decide who the finalists are going to be. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a reach to have him in there. I think Garrett Wilson's going to win it.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised that Brock Purdy's in there.
Jeffrey, I read your article, the not-so-secret ingredient to winning in the NFL. And me being a former receiver, I really enjoyed it, man, because it highlights the receiver position. And you've been around the game for a while. How have you seen the emergence of these young receivers affect the way the NFL is played today and how important they are today?
Well, I think they're vital, and you see it. I mean, you got a couple guys there in Seattle who are fit that bill, and you see what they mean to that offense when Russell Wilson wasn't there. I just like the way the league has gone in terms of it being a quarterback-driven league for the last, whatever, two, three decades. And if you don't have that really dominant receiver, it's just hard to play at a high level. And you know, you look at the guys that are named in that story, the Justin Jeffersons, the Stephon Diggs, guys like DeAndre Hopkins. Like, teams went out and got those guys for a reason because they make a difference. They're hard to match up with. You know, you look at Cincinnati. As great as Joe Burrow is, and they got Jamar Chase, mm-hmm. That's when they really took off as a team. And they rode that to an AFC championship. So I think, yeah, they definitely are huge difference makers now. And I think that the more teams can get those guys, the bigger difference they make for an offense.
Do you think that there was at any point a dip in the appreciation of receivers that's now seen a surge because of the growth of kind of being a quarterback pass-heavy league?
I think there was. I think they got to a point there about, you know, 15, 20 years ago when a lot of these guys were headaches. And they were hard to deal with. I think guys like Terrell Owens, for example. And
right.
They got to a place where they were just really almost detracting from what teams were trying to do. And there's still some guys out there who are high maintenance. And you saw some of the blowback that Stephon Diggs got after the Bills lost over the weekend about the way he responded to it. But I think for the most part, you're seeing more guys who have the same amount of talent as those guys like Terrell Owens had back in the day. But they're also a lot easier to deal with. And so Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, people like that, Deebo Samuel, you know, aside from wanting to get paid, that's all you really hear about them. They pretty much work hard and make great plays.
Jeffrey, let's talk about some quarterbacks, man. For the last couple of years, you know, the NFL has been pumping out, just the media in general, that we get to see Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen go at it for the next 5 to 10 years. And Joe Burrow says, hold on, don't forget about me. All right, now I'm in the mix. Now I beat Josh Allen. I've beaten Pat Mahomes with the last three times that they face each other. What do you feel about the future of this league? And has Joe Burrow inserted himself as maybe the number two guy when it comes to quarterback battles?
Well, he's definitely number two. I think he wants to be number one. If you ever hear him talk and spend time around him. It is an exciting time. In many ways, it reminds me a lot of, you go back to the end of the late 90s, early 2000s, and you saw a lot of great quarterbacks leaving the game then. You know, you had Dan Marino was leaving, Troy Aikman was done, Steve Young was leaving. you know, you had a number of great quarterbacks that were hanging it up. And then you had a, like, kind of a young Peyton Manning was in there, Kurt Warner, Tom Brady was starting out. Guys were just starting to get a feel for it. And then over time, you saw more guys come along. I think that's where we're at now. You know, Brady's is at the end of his career. Aaron Rodgers, but Roethlisberger's gone. Drew Brees. And you've got these three guys right now in Allen and Burrow and Mahomes that are really transcendent. And if you spend time or you watch the Bengals, you get the sense. They remind me a lot of the Seahawks when they really started to take off. Now, their offense is more like the Seahawks defense. They're so brash. They believe in themselves so much. They're so talented. And Burrow really drives that. Jamar Chase really drives that. And so yeah, I think as great as Mahomes is, I live in Kansas City. I see it every day here. Joe Burrow and Josh Allen are right there with him.
Hey, Jeffrey, the big question everyone has is about one of those quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes. What does your gut tell you about whether or not he plays this weekend?
Well, he's going to play. I don't doubt that. He talked his way back into the game against Jacksonville, and you saw how he was moving. This guy will do anything to be on a football field. And so I heard the press conference today. He's trying to go out there and practice to see where it's at. He's been posting videos, doing his rehab here. I think he'll be out there, but I think he won't be the Patrick Mahomes that we're used to seeing. You know, I think he'll be severely compromised as far as mobility. And that's going to really be the question mark here. Like, how can he play at a high level without that aspect of his game? Because as great of a passer as he is, he just kills teams that, you know, get too far into coverage and leave openings and lanes for him to run through. And without that, I mean, it's just, you guys saw the game. I mean, he was not the same quarterback in the second half of that game.
We look at the NFC matchup between Philly and San Fran. And when I look at these two teams, I see complete teams, right? You look at this Philly offense, got all these weapons, Jalen Hurts, and they have 70 sacks on the other side. Look at the 49ers. You got Brock Purdy doing exactly what he needs to do to get Debo and all these guys the ball. Then you have Armstead on the other side. Then you flip over to the AFC, and it's more of a pass-happy type of game. My co-host and I, Stace, have been talking about this all week. And it just goes to show that there's different ways to be successful in this league. So which way do you think is more sustainable? Is it the more quarterback-heavy type of feel that we see in the AFC, or more of the in-the-trenches, hard-nosed football type look we feel in the NFC?
I think it's the trenches. And I'm actually working on a story talking about how aggressive general managers have gotten over the last few years as far as making moves and really not trying to put as much into franchise quarterbacks or investing in franchise quarterbacks, because you're seeing more GMs who believe it's better to have that salary cap space, the ability to make moves, almost like the NBA now. And you got, again, you saw it there in Seattle with letting Russell Wilson go, that I know it's great to think that if you can go find your Patrick Mahomes or your Joe Burrow or your Tom Brady, you're going to win for 15, 20 years. But the reality is most teams aren't going to do that. And so, yeah, I think it is. You look at Philadelphia as being a perfect example of that, and the Niners to a certain extent. Philadelphia had Carson Wentz 5 years ago, you know, and he was supposed to be an MVP and had got a big deal. Now it's Jalen Hurts, and they've rebuilt that team and spent a lot of money in free agency and signed a lot of key players that have helped them win. And they will tell you that, you know, it's great to have a great quarterback, but having a great quarterback doesn't guarantee you're going to win a championship. You still got to win it with a great team, and the teams that are in the NFC are really great teams that have great teams around good quarterbacks.
I, Jeffrey, love the final four teams that we're going to watch. I don't even know which game I'm more looking forward to. It may be the AFC just because of the quarterbacks, but, man, we've been watching here in Seattle, obviously, San Francisco for a lot of the year. Is there any one of these four teams that if they do advance to the Super Bowl, you are most confident in winning the whole thing?
I feel like it's the Bengals. I'm with you. I think all these teams, I've been around all these teams, know their coaches, and I'm really impressed with all of them. But I just feel like the Bengals are on the cusp of really being something great. And I think they know it. And again, I go back to what the Seahawks were when they started to get going with the defense and the people around them, the personalities. And the Bengals just have this attitude that nobody really believes in them. That last year they thought people thought it was a fluke. When they were 0-2, people were writing them off. Will hang over. And Joe Burrow is one of these guys that if you look at the quarterbacks out there today who are young and talented, that, you know, they're doing commercials, they're getting a lot of exposure. I don't see a Joe Burrow commercial anywhere out there.
You
know, if you go to Joe Burrow press conference, you know, he's not enjoying it. He's not sitting there, you know, soaking up all the attention. Like, he's out there, he wants to do one thing. He wants to kick everybody's butt who's in his way. And I think that's a big part of who he is. That's a big part of why that franchise has turned around with him under center.
We talk a lot about quarterbacks for good reason, right? They're the face of the franchise in the NFL. I'm going to go back to a quarterback who I'm kind of worried about right now, Jeffrey, man. Dak Prescott and them Cowboys. I mean, it's been, been 7 years. He's been running this thing, and it can't get over the hump. Every single year on paper, the Cowboys look like they should be in the mix. When you look at Dak Prescott in that situation over there, what do you think they're thinking? That they're still going to roll with their guy? You think they're going to get some reinforcement over there at the QB spot to push him? What are your thoughts there?
Oh, I think he'll be there. I think Jerry Jones has made it clear that when he believes in somebody and he invests in somebody, he's going to give them every opportunity to be what he believes they can be. And I thought somebody said it really well the other day. I think it was on TV, and they said, Dak Prescott is such a great guy that people in Dallas who are fans of the team want him to be as great a quarterback as he is. And he's just he's not a great quarterback. I mean, he's a really good quarterback, but he's the kind of quarterback who needs help around him. And I sometimes feel like when I watch them play that they try to turn him into a quarterback who's deserving of whatever, a $45 million a year contract and all the other stuff. And I think that's what happened with Denver and Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. You try to make a guy into something because of what he's making or because of what his reputation is, and you can really go south. I think Dak Prescott, like Russ, you know, needs to have a good run game, needs to have good weapons, and needs to have a good defense. And I think that's what Dallas has to focus on getting around him, because if you put too much pressure on him to be that kind of guy, he's not going to be Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. Like, he's just not built that way. I think he's great at what he does, but that's where I think they end up having problems.
Hey, Jeffrey, you had to watch a ton of football this year, so you'd be totally forgiven for not watching every single Seahawks game. They weren't really like a favorite contender to start the year. So I recognize that you may not have seen every snap by Geno Smith, but Bump and I and listeners have been talking, I'm really all off season, about whether or not the Seahawks should bring him back. Not only like Jeffrey, I'd be interested to know what you made of his season, but also like, if you could speak to, if you have an opinion on, like, if there's like a middle class of quarterbacks, almost like serviceable starters, and if those guys are ever good enough to get you, if that makes sense, you know what I mean? Like, he's not looking, I would imagine, for like even like Dak Prescott money. I wonder if those guys are ever good enough. What do you think?
Look, I think the best comp for Geno Smith is Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. And you look at what they pay him, it's around $28, $30 million a year average salary, which is a good salary. I think Geno is like probably $4, $5, $6 million this year, right? He wouldn't make any kind of money. So I think you're talking about a significant raise, but you understand you're getting a quarterback who wants to play in that system and embrace that system and the opportunity to come with that. And so when the Tennessee Titans gave Ryan Tannehill the deal they gave him, there were some people who said, you're overpaying for him. I think what you're paying for is a guy that buys you time, gives you an opportunity to win games, a guy who has credibility in your locker room, but it's also not going to break your salary cap. And so I think if you're able to get Geno Smith for under around $30 million a year or less, it gives you an opportunity to keep taking care of your roster. It's still a fairly young roster. It gives you an opportunity to make some moves in free agency. They've got a high pick coming from the deal they made with Russ. So I think that if you're Geno Smith, like, you got to be smart enough to know this is a great place to be. They gave me an opportunity. I'm probably going to be the comeback player of the year. Why not take what I can get at this point in my career and continue to be someplace where I'm happy? And I think that's how you play it. But I certainly think he deserves a raise. Just try to keep him. They were a great surprise, and I think that if he stays there, they can still do big things.
Last one I got for you, Jeffrey, man. I love an underdog story, and the Jacksonville Jaguars did exactly that. Man, they bounced back from a horrible year under Urban Meyer. You get Doug Peterson over there. He's a Northwest guy, so we show some love for him here. You got Trevor Lawrence over there. You got Christian Kirk. How far do you think this team is from being a consistent playoff contender?
Oh, I think they're there. Doug Peterson, it shows you how bad Urban Meyer was. you knew he was bad anyway because they were picking first overall, but then you look at this team being in the playoffs and getting to the second round, a lot to be happy about. They spent a lot of money in free agency, and certainly people were surprised by that. They got good return. Christian Kirk was surprised with that deal, but he was a good player for them. Evan Engram showed up, Zay Jones. And so I think they got a lot of good things going there, and the quarterback is coming along and is playing for a coach who's really good with quarterbacks. So I've been a big Tennessee Titans fan for a while with what Mike Vrabel's done there and how consistent they've been. And it just looks like that division now with their issues. Texans are really down. You don't know what's going to happen in Indianapolis. That Jaguars are primed to be running the AFC South for at least the next 5 or 6 years or maybe longer.
He is Jeffrey Chedia, a senior columnist for NFL.com and NFL Network. Make sure you're reading his work at NFL.com. I just retweeted his 6 initial thoughts heading into Championship Sunday. If you guys want a quick primer on the weekend's games, that's a great one to check out. Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you, guys. Great talking to you.
All right. Again, that was Jeffrey Chedia on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Kind enough to join us for a quick preview of the championship games. Let's get to a quick 4-down territory.
This is 4-down territory, going inside the game. What former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump, what's something 3 of the 4 remaining teams in the playoffs have in common?
Stace, let me just say, every now and then, like, I'm reminded how lucky we are to do our job. You get to talk to people who are just cool. Like, I've read his work for years, so big ups, Jeffrey, man. Curtis, thanks for setting that up, dog. Appreciate
no problem,
you.
Bub.
All right, back to 4-down territory.
Here we go.
All right, 3 out of the 4 teams, yeah. You know what they got? They got hella Pro Bowlers.
Hella
Pro Bowlers. Eagles got 8. Chiefs have 7. San Fran has 6. 8. The Bengals have 3. Now, they're like the poor man out the group, but they're still ballers. But more specifically, 3 of those teams have Pro Bowlers on offensive line and defensive line. And that's what the Hawks need. The Hawks have 3 Pro Bowlers, a QB, a DB, a safety, and a punter. Nobody in the trenches. If you want to be a good football team to make a run the playoffs, you got to take care of the trenches. And we just haven't seen that out of the Hawks so far. So I look at these teams and it's all about comparison. I'm always trying to figure out, okay, what's the next step for the Seahawks? How do they get there? They need to get some guys in the trenches, some dogs, some hogs. That's what they need. They don't have them yet.
2nd down. The AP MVP finalists have been released. So who's on the list? And why does this list make you happy?
What did Jeffrey say? Each team has a nice receiver. That's what you need.
Key to winning.
Key to winning is a receiver. Remember that, folks. Okay?
And Justin Jefferson is
on this list. He's on this list. And he's not going to win it. It's a quarterback league. It's a quarterback award. I understand that. I accept that as a receiver. But to see number 18, Justin Jefferson, on the list is awesome. You mentioned earlier over 1,800 yards from scrimmage. This guy is the best route runner in the game right now. And I just love his approach to the game. I love his passion for the game. And I appreciate it. So he's not going to get this award. I think Pat Mahomes is going to get it. He probably should get this award. He had another great year. Good for Pat Mahomes. But the fact that receivers are starting to get some love, I love it. Give me more of it.
3rd down. All right, the Chiefs are experiencing something new. They are underdogs for the first time in the Patrick Mahomes era. Will this help or hurt them?
So first, why are they underdogs? Because Pat Mahomes got that little ankle situation going.
Yeah.
And that high ankle sprain is nothing to deal with. I've had it twice. I played an Apple Cup with the high ankle sprain. And by the 4th quarter, I'm hobbling. I'm not even running routes. I'm just finding space on the field. I'm sitting down, catching the football, and getting down.
Oh.
So what does this do for the Chiefs? They are now, what, 1.5 underdogs? Something they've never been in the playoffs before when Pat Mahomes has been their quarterback. Some people can say this is going to motivate them. The league is against them. Me personally, I think they're going to look at this and be like, man, we're mortal. Pat Mahomes is hurt. The Bengals have had our number. Joe Burrow is still doing his thing. I think this makes them a bit nervous. Now, they're professionals. They're going to go out. They're going to execute. They're going to do their thing. But I think at some point, some of these guys are going to tap into reality and say, okay, we aren't the favorites. We need to do something special. because our guy's hurt. We need to pick him up. Now, thankfully, they have one of the best tight ends to ever play the game over there in Travis Kelce. He's going to help him out, but they got to rally together. So, you know, the first time we did this, I said it hurts them a bit. I say it doesn't hurt them or help them. I think it brings them back to reality and says, look, we can't just show up. We got to play some football and help number 15 out.
It's so interesting how different teams can not only use different things as motivation, but how being doubted can help some teams and potentially hurt others. Like, you're right. Like, we aren't in the heads of guys. Maybe Chris Jones is over there like, great, doubt us. That's wonderful. But I think that the Bengals and maybe the Eagles are best able to use doubt to their benefit this weekend of the two conferences. I don't know why I choose them over the other two, because the 49ers are the number two seed, but it just feels like it makes sense. Like, it feels like of the four teams, the Bengals are definitely the most doubted. Mm-hmm. And people kind of look past the Eagles. They were like, ah, the 49ers, though. Like, what a great story. Look at this win streak. And the Eagles were like, excuse us. We were the number one seed. What are you talking about?
We've been balling all year.
I know. All right. Let's get to fourth down. Who was snubbed for Coach of the Year finalist?
Now, we got five coaches who deserve to be recognized. Not hating on these dudes. Being a coach in the NFL is extremely hard. Got Nick Sirianni, Kyle Shanahan, Brian Daboll, Sean McDermott, and Doug Peterson. All these guys deserve it. But I'm looking at my guy, John Boyle. He's a writer for the Seahawks. And he brings up a good point. He goes, look, and really, this snub is a vacuum. Wouldn't bug me that much. It's the moving target over the course of his career that gets me. He's talking about Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll has overachieved during a complete rebuild after a five-win season in 2010, one with an ascending young team after missing the playoffs in 2012. He's led the Seahawks to number one seed and Super Bowls with loaded rosters of 2013 and 14, overcome potentially brutal Super Bowl hangover, as well as Cam Chancellor's holdout to finish 2015 one of the NFL's hottest teams. All he's saying is that the target is moving. Like, how come when it comes to Pete Carroll, he does what Doug Peterson essentially did this year, but yet he gets no recognition? It blows my mind. I'm not saying none of these guys should be kicked out of this group and Pete Carroll should be thrown in there. All I'm saying is that, man, give this man some respect. No one expected this team to do anything this year. They get into the playoffs. He produces a Pro Bowl quarterback. He drafts a rookie Pro Bowl corner in the fifth round. Diggs comes back, has a decent year. I mean, goodness gracious, what else does this man have to do just to get some recognition? He don't need the award, but man, get my boy Pete. He's 71. He ain't going to be coaching for very, very much longer, man. Let's appreciate him while he's here.
Well said. Let's see what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Bump and Stacey, brought to you by Dick's Driving. So, folks, what's on tap?
The Kraken are back at it, taking the Canucks at 7 p.m. tonight. That's What's on Tap, brought to you by Dick's Driving. Coming up next, our last guest, Jeffrey Chedia, great interview, fantastic writer, Bump's new absolute favorite person in the world because of his love for wide receivers, but also had some really, really interesting comparisons to make between one of the playoff teams and the Seahawks. I was not expecting it, but I want to get back to it and talk about what we, Bump, think about that comparison, whether or not we think it's fair. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Some interesting points from our last guest, Jeffrey Chedia of NFL Network and NFL.com. Had a bit of a preview for the championship games, and we talked a lot with Jeffrey about the Bengals, Bump. And he drew a comparison between the Seahawks and the Bengals.
But I just feel like the Bengals are on the cusp of really being something great, and I think they know it. And again, I go back to what the Seahawks were when they started to get going with the defense and the people around and the personalities. And the Bengals just have this attitude that nobody really believes in them. That last year they thought people thought it was a fluke. When they were 0-2, people were writing them off. It's a little hangover. And Joe Burrow is one of these guys that, if you look at the quarterbacks out there today who are young and talented, that, you know, they're doing commercials, they're getting a lot of exposure. I don't see a Joe Burrow commercial anywhere out there.
That's a good point.
Joe Burrow press conference, you know, he's not enjoying it. He's not sitting there, you know, soaking up all the attention. Like, he's out there, he wants to do one thing. He wants to kick everybody's butt who's in his way. And I think that's a big part of who he is. That's a big part of why that franchise has turned around with him under center.
I would never think to compare the Seahawks to either of the AFC teams. I mean, I think all four teams are in a league of their own, but it was interesting to hear that part of what makes the Bengals is also this kind of like chip on their shoulder attitude they have. Now, I don't know how many people are doubting Joe Burrow per se, but Jeffrey's right in that there's certainly more attention paid at the end of the day to Patrick Mahomes and to the Chiefs. What did you make of the comparison?
When he first said there are no Joe Burrow commercials, the first thing I did was go through my head like, man, I have not seen a Joe Burrow commercial. So one, y'all slipping when it comes to endorsement. This guy can make y'all a lot of money because he is the coolest dude on the block. But then that makes complete sense because when you listen to him speak, you watch him during the conferences, he just wants to get in, get out. He wants to play football. He's not sitting there soaking it all in. He's all about winning. And I can appreciate that about Joe Burrow. I'm not saying Pat Mahomes ain't about winning. I'm not saying Jalen Hurts ain't about winning. But Joe gives me the feeling that he still has something to prove. When really, what he's done in 3 years in his league, quarterbacks would die for and say, I've done enough in this league. I've been to the Super Bowl. I didn't win it. I've been to the Pro Bowl. There's so many things that he's done, but he's like, no, I'm not done yet. And that's somebody you can follow. And he also mentioned that the Bengals know they got something special going on over there. And there are doubters. I was doubting them. 0-2, what'd I say? They're done.
Yeah.
They're done. Super Bowl run is over. It was nice, a great story. But they found a way to stay hungry. Now the challenge is going to be, because after this year, they're not sneaking up on anybody. No one's going to doubt them. How do you stay hungry? But something tells me, with the leadership of Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, they're going to find a way to do it. And all of a sudden, Stacey, they are now my Super Bowl favorites to win this thing.
Me too. I initially took Kansas City a rematch, Kansas City and San Francisco. My bracket's perfect. I don't think my bracket is staying perfect. In fact, I think my bracket might be completely busted because it may be Cincinnati and Philadelphia meeting in the Super Bowl, in which case I am done. It's over for me. It's over. And like, I think you and Lefko are the only people that could potentially catch up, which would be devastating. But it happens. You know what I mean? Things happen in the playoffs. In this case, what happened was Patrick Mahomes getting hurt. But not only that, all of us realizing that we ruled out the Bengals a little too soon. And maybe because the lasting impression from the wild card round was them almost losing to the Lamar Jackson-less Ravens.
Right.
We thought, good luck. Right? Good luck against the Bills. But they've just continued to prove people wrong. I go back to Brandon Bean, who's the Bills GM, when he was asked about the difference in team building between the Bills and Bengals. And he basically was like, well, they sucked for a long time, so they got lots of high picks. And I don't want to do that. I love the comparison between the Bengals and Seahawks in terms of attitude and in terms of being like, we don't need you guys to approve of us. We're going to do it our own way. I only wish that they had the picks that the Bengals did and were as bad for as long as the Bengals, because that is a big part of how the Bengals got to where they are. Don't get me wrong. It's hard work. It's great play. It's great coaching. But you also had like the number one overall pick, and you had another top 10 pick, and you had some great picks because you were constantly bad.
Yeah, that's one way to go about it. Number one pick, and he's playing like the number one pick in Joe Burrow. There's a lot of guys who are drafted high, and they don't pan out. That's the NFL. That's life. It doesn't always work out. The Bengals have found a way. So with that being said, we need to give management a bit more love as well for the Cincinnati Bengals, because they've been bad for a long time. You had an opportunity to draft high. You draft high for a few years, and you've done a great job with it. And also, it's like the fourth time I'm mentioning culture today. The Bengals used to have the worst culture in the NFL. Yeah. Like, it was bad. Guys didn't want to go there. Who's the head coach? Marvin Lewis, head coach over there for 8 to 10 years, could not control his players. Like, whenever the Bengals and the Steelers lined up, you knew it was going to be nasty. It was going to be dirty. But Zach Taylor coming in and management doing what they did, they found a way to change the way that we perceive this football team. And perception is big.
Yeah.
It's big for us, and it's big for the guys who are going to become free agents, either wanting to stay or wanting to go there. So, you know, about time we put some respect on that name, man. I've been, you know what? This is what 13 years of marriage does to you, Stacey. You just admit when you're wrong, you know? Like, look.
You think that, you're admitting when you were wrong about the Bengals.
I was wrong about the Bengals. I thought they were done. I didn't think they could back up that performance from last year. Now, they still got some work to do, but after this year, it's kind of like, all right, I believe in what you're doing. You have great leadership, and you have some key pieces in place to get it done.
I want a Super Bowl with the Bengals. I've convinced myself over the last like 15 minutes of the show, like I need to see it. I mean, again, I took Kansas City, but like, which team would I rather watch right now? It's going to be Cincinnati. They are imperfect, as are all of these teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Cincinnati, that the run game they had, it's not like Mixon is bad by any means. He's clearly good, but that might have been their best rushing performance as a team, or one of their best offensive line performances as a team. So great timing. It got them to the conference championship. Can they repeat that, right? Like, I think it is still fair to wonder if missing 3 of 5 starters up front is going to hinder them. Even though they proved everyone wrong last game, you got to do it again.
And especially when you got Jones over there.
Yes.
You got Clark
Chris
over
Jones,
there.
Who's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle. So it's all about game planning at this point. Can Ja'Marr Chase win his one-on-one battles? Can Joe Mixon muster up the confidence he had last week when he used the NFL selling tickets to the Bills-Chiefs game in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Like, you got to find things like that. And that only helps or works for so long. Same thing in Seattle with Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Right. Some of these guys were done with the rah-rah, the stories, the all this stuff, and they just want to be treated as professionals. So I wonder how long the Bengals can hold on to that. I think this year you're good. But after a while, it's going to be like, okay, this is just who we are now. Now there's a standard that we have to bring to that, and it starts at the top.
Yeah, there's a psychology that happens, and I think for different reasons. It's not always like a locker room issue or a performance issue, but there is a really interesting psychology behind what happens when you start with a chip on your shoulder, prove everyone wrong, and then win all the time. And how can you maintain that kind of no one believes in us and that kind of hunger to be great when you're at the top of the league? Like, I wonder if Seattle kind of struggled to maintain that during their very best years. I don't know.
No, they did.
Yeah.
It's hard to.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep that new car smell. You know what I mean? Eventually that thing goes away and you got to throw some of those little tree incense in there. What are those things called? You hang up from your rear view mirror.
Yeah, a little new car smell.
Car fresheners.
Yeah, you got those.
Throw
car
some of those in there.
Little trees up there.
All right, what I need to know is coming your way next. Get your questions in. Any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Again, that number, text now, 866-979-3776. Your questions, our answers next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
We need your questions. Any question will do. I am personally a fan of advice column style questions, but obviously this is a sports talk show, so sports questions are fine as well. 866-979-3776, the Mac and Jack's text line. This is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Bump, I am starting with a sports question. What I need to know is, who do you think is the best sports coach of all time, irrespective of the sport they coached? It's only two choices, Bill Belichick or Phil Jackson. I already know. It's
you know where I'm going, baby, Mr. Zen.
There we go.
He got 6 with the Bulls. He got 5 with the Lakers. He got 1 as a player from the Himalayas. Phil Jackson.
It is hard to deny that it is Phil Jackson. 11 championships as opposed to 8 for Bill Belichick. 6. 6-time Super Bowl champion. The only thing I will give young William is, would you say it is harder to sustain that period of success in the NFL versus NBA?
Probably the harder in the NFL.
I think it's harder in the NFL, too.
There's so much turnover.
Yes.
I mean, careers are shorter. And then in Bill's defense, Phil Jackson coached Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. Like, you're supposed to win with those dudes.
Exactly. But that's not to take away from Phil, because I think Phil is the answer. Yeah. Phil is the answer. That's what we're settling with. Stacey, Michael, and Curtis. Brock Purdy. Earlier we were being haters, saying that he shouldn't be Offensive Rookie of the Year. Would your position be the same if he was a Seahawk? From Ralph in Bellevue Crossroads.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, 5
games.
Yeah. I wouldn't be inspired up.
He's got some potential.
I would not categorize him as the best rookie in the NFL.
Yeah, it'd be one of those things of like when your friend does an embarrassingly positive speech about you somewhere and you're kind of getting sheepish, you know? Like, it would be really cool if he was a Seahawk to be nominated, but you'd be almost embarrassed. Like, oh, God, I'm sorry. Like, there are other people that deserve it. I didn't mean it. Bump, by the way, the text line wants you to know that you had it right. The brand is called Little Trees.
And you know what I say to that? That is great branding, because I didn't know it was Little Trees. I just simply described what I saw.
Yeah.
A little tree.
What I need to know, how do you deal with an uninvited guest to your home, presumably, that doesn't know it's time to leave? Whew.
Wait, uninvited guest? So like,
sorry, invited.
Okay.
I said it quickly. An invited
They better
guest.
Know it's time to leave if they're uninvited.
I read it too quickly. How do you deal with an invited guest that doesn't know it's time to leave? So let's say it's like,
New 9 PM.
Year's. Oh, I was thinking more like New Year's, when it's like, oh, we did it midnight. And then it rolls around to 3 and you're like, guys, we did the New Year's
gotta
thing.
Go.
It's time to go.
We're closer to next year now than we are the last year.
I will be completely honest. We did this for a New Year's party once and I was ready for bed. I was done. I was ready for the evening to be over. And this wasn't like 12:30. It was like 4 a.m.
Oh my
so I just,
gosh,
I got a garbage bag and I started cleaning up.
Yeah, that's how you
that's
do it.
Move.
That's how you do it.
That's the move.
Yep.
You gotta
That's
clean
it.
Up. Is there
Start
another?
Cleaning up.
Is there another thing that you could? I mean, I'm not sticking around if someone's cleaning
nothing
up.
Nothing good happens after like 2 a.m. Right? That's the saying. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
So.
Nah, you know what I do? I say, hey, I'm about to go to sleep. I'm tired. You guys are willing to stay here on the couch or the extra room if you want to, and then they get like, oh no, we'll go home. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, go home.
What I need to know, who will be picking more grass out of their face mask on Sunday, Purdy or Hurts?
I mean, Philly got 70 sacks. I'm going to go with Purdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Hurts is also more evasive, and San Francisco will get to him, but man, 70 sacks. Holy cow. It's unreal. What I need, someone said, just tell them to bounce. Tell them to bounce. We're also hearing turn the lights off. That's weird.
Yeah.
Not going to turn the lights off. Absolutely not.
Sink the club.
I know. What I need to know. Would Gino
turn the lights on at the club.
Oh, God.
Oh, right.
That's when you know you're there too.
Nothing was more horrifying than being 21 at a club when the lights go on and you're like, oh, no one look at me.
I'm hideous.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden if the sun came out and a bat is like freaking out and, you know, flying out of the way, that would be me. Would Gino, what I need to know, would Gino perform as well in another system? It hasn't worked for Russ and Gino is older. Will teams take a flyer on him and pay?
I think there are systems that are similar to the Seahawks. I think Gino is smart enough and wise enough at this point of his career to look at what they got going over there, to have these conversations and say, okay, this is where I've been successful. Let's try to duplicate some of this.
Yeah.
I think Russell was at the point of his career where he's had so much success, he thought he was invincible and thought he could do more. So, yeah, I think Gino could be successful. I also think Gino would set himself up for success better than Russell did.
I agree. I think that Gino's weapons, Gino is less, I don't mean this as an insult, unique a player than Russ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Russ was at his best, I think, with a very specific brand of Seahawks offense, and he was like MVP caliber player in that offense, but like, he wasn't like a pure pocket passer, even though I think he was a better pocket passer than people gave him credit for. Gino, I think his ceiling isn't as high, but he's almost like more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he can work from a lot of different systems.
Yeah.
What I need to know, out of the three of y'all, who would win a triathlon? Obviously, me.
Stacey.
Next question.
Sure, with the swimming portion.
Yeah.
You'd probably finish in 10th place.
What is it? Running, biking,
and swimming.
Very funny, Curtis. Running, biking, swimming. I know how to do all those
things. It's a marathon. That's the running portion. Or that's the Ironman, isn't it? When it's like a marathon for running, you swim a couple miles, and then you bike like 100 miles or something like that.
This is what I think. At some point, we're just all walking together.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what?
Definitely.
I'm good.
Yeah. Well, no, you guys will be walking, and I'm going to be doing a slow jog, so I feel like I'm being productive, but it's one of those things
you'll
where you're like...
You'll be doing the backwards jog. Like, come on, guys. Here we go.
Please. What I need to know, what's the best chain sandwich shop? Think Subway, Potbelly, Quiznos, Jersey Mike's, etc.
I like Jersey Mike's.
I've never had Jersey Mike's.
Jersey Mike's gives you the most. My wife used to manage a Jimmy John's back in the day. Yeah. Nice. So we're a little partial to Jimmy John's in the Rogers house.
I like the Vito from Jimmy John's. It's probably my favorite individual
it's like
sandwich.
Kind of Italian.
Yeah.
Lean on
I'll do that. Let's see. What I need to know. First of all, I will say, guys, any questions? The entire text line has turned into people telling me how to get guests out of my house. Most common answer is just saying the party is over, which, like, I don't want to be a party pooper, right?
It's fun to be that.
No, it's not. Yeah, I want to be the cool one.
If it's like a small group of your closest friends, I'd be like, hey, bro, it's time to go, bro.
Yeah, but a big party.
Or if it's like a birthday party and as soon as it hits midnight,
I'm sorry.
It's not your birthday anymore. Go home.
I got to be more passive aggressive than that. I can't do it. All right, you guys, that will do it for us today. We'll be back with you at 10 a.m. tomorrow. For Michael Bumpus, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.